You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I am your host, Michael Kushner, and I'm so glad you're joining me. Thank you, as always, to the Broadway Podcast Network, and thank you to you for listening. Where would I be without my audience? Please, you could do one more thing for me, that is subscribe, comment, rate, do all that good stuff. Follow on Instagram at DearMultiHyphenate. And if you want to be on the podcast, you can go to DearMultiHyphenate.com and submit your multi-hyphenate story, and maybe you'll come on the podcast. That would be so fun. I love hearing from you. I'm so excited about this episode, but before we jump into Danny Stoller, I got a little mock-up of my soon-to-be-released book, How to Be a Multi-Hyphenate in the Theater Business, Conversations, Advice, and Tips from Dear Multi-Hyphenate, which is getting published by Routledge Publishing of the Taylor & Francis Group, and will be released this year. I'm so excited to share it with you. I'm super proud of it. Writing a book is very hard, but there's some good stuff in there, and I'm starting to see what it's going to look like, and it's so exciting. And I got to thinking, I was like, you know, I have my why statement. I know why I do what I do, but I was like, why do I specifically do this podcast or this book? And it's like, I'm so inspired by my professor, Cynthia Henderson, at Ithaca College, who always tied art and acting into something metaphysical or mathematical. And I was thinking, and I was just like, for every way there is to create art, for every option, there are multiple possibilities. It's like a deck of cards, right? Like, I think there's 52 cards in a deck, right? And I think that equals, you can never have the same, there's so many options for the order in which the cards can go that it's almost physically impossible for the cards to ever be shuffled in the same way. And I feel that's the same way about multi-hyphenating. I feel it's, you know, there are infinite possibilities of how you can be a theater artist. And that's why I do what I do, is to showcase those stories to inspire you, to make sure that you can find a lucrative, successful, unique way of approaching theater artistry, and that you can pay your bills any which way you want to, and have that income just based solely on your artistry. It's possible. Not only do I do it, but every guest I bring on does it. So if you're questioning yourself, if you don't think you can do it, the answer is you absolutely can. You absolutely can. So keep listening, and I hope in every episode you listen to, there's something you take away with it. Anyway, moving on to Danny Stoller, I'm so, so, so excited for you to get to know her. Danny Stoller is a DC-based theater artist. Danny Stoller is an actor, playwright, and podcaster and Jewish advocate in Maryland by way of Brooklyn, New York. She has performed all across the DMV, which in this episode, you'll hear her say is the DC, Maryland, and Virginia theater areas, from the Folger Shakespeare Company to the Kennedy Center. Her play, Easy Women Smoking Loose Cigarettes, had its premiere at the Tony Award-winning Signature Theater in Shirlington, Virginia, and was featured in the New York Times at the beginning of the pandemic. Her upcoming play, The Joy That Carries You, co-written with Awa Salseka, is opening this May at the Only Theater Center. When she's not writing, she hosts the podcast Zen and Sugar, which is centered on intuitive eating, balance, and healing, disordered food, and body relationships. Follow her on Instagram at Danny Danger Stoller, or her website, DannyStoller.com. I hope you enjoy this episode. Danny is an absolute dream. And if you do have a sensitivity to curse words, I'm just going to tell you that we do curse a lot in this episode. So enjoy. Hi, Danny Stoller.
Hi. Hello.
I'm so happy you're here.
I'm so happy to be here.
So what did you... Okay, you traveled from D.C. to be in the city.
I did.
To talk on this podcast.
Yes.
But also... To celebrate your birthday.
I know. Isn't that fucking crazy?
How old are you now?
34.
How's it feel?
I guess because the past 2 years we're in fucking pandemic. Can I curse?
Yeah.
Okay. We're in pandemic. You just kind of feel like, did 32 and 33 happen?
The pandemic has certainly changed me energetically. Like before the pandemic, I was so, I got my energy from other people. Like I really depended on other people to give me energy.
Yeah.
And now I'm literally like, the couch is what gives me energy. I'm like, oh, this looks really
comfy.
It looks comfy and safe.
Yeah.
Whiskey was giving me energy for a second. A little too much energy. I needed to figure that out.
Yes. But you know, we all, I think, leaned on different things at the beginning.
It's so true.
Yeah.
So you are, I think, one of the more talented people that I've ever met in my life.
That's very sweet.
We did Much Ado About Nothing together.
We did.
And that's how I like first saw your absolute brilliance at Ithaca College. And I just remember watching you and being like, you take unapologetic risks and are just so, you understand the assignment, I think.
Thank you.
Every time I see you perform, I haven't seen you perform in a second live, but I remember just you taking unapologetic risks and they were all appropriate and part of the show. And I just learned so much from watching you.
That means so much.
You're so welcome. And I feel like you carry that energy of you as a performer into your artistic life.
I hope to.
So what are your hyphens? How would you identify?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, you know, it's a funny thing, right? Because I think actor was sort of my first hyphen, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was like, I'm an actor. And then slowly but surely, not that I don't love acting. I do. I think that there's just sort of this sense of the things that I love about acting. I love the community and the camaraderie and the creation, the collaboration, all of the C words.
Mm-hmm. And cunt.
And cunt, which, you know, I think is, you know, you and I both also went to French Woods, mm-hmm. which is crazy. But it's, you know, you kind of create these rep companies,
right?
Mm-hmm. of people. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, was always the thing that really excited me, was just having a group and you were constantly moving into new roles, into new places. And I think part of the reason that I love DC and Maryland and Virginia, the DMV, is because it kind of is like one giant rep company. Mm. Because it is these three areas, I was about to say three states, but maybe one day, DC. You know, because it's these three areas put together, we kind of have people doing all different types of things at all different types of theaters, right. Working at bigger houses like the Shakespeare Theater Company, and then working at some of the smaller houses and everywhere in between. And I find that to be very exciting, mm-hmm. that, you know, you're in this sort of group performance space, which can, you know, be a blessing and a curse too, because it's like, you know, there's sometimes a lack of newness at moments because you're with the same people all the time, which can, you know, it's like being on a sitcom, I assume, for years and years and years. But I really love that. Anyway, so hyphens.
A lot of open windows this conversation.
Sorry.
For both of us.
Like, you know, actor was my thing, but I started to realize that what I really loved more was the creation mm-hmm. process. And I had always been a writer, and so I really began kind of hustling a bit more with playwriting. And so it kind of becomes actor, playwright. I'm an integrative nutrition health coach, so I work with people to heal disordered eating through holistic modalities, not like anti-vax modalities,
right.
like we talk like ways of working through disordered eating, which is different from eating disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess in the past 2 years, advocacy has gone really through. I hate to use the term activist because I'm bored by it, because
yeah.
I feel like it's influencership via, you know, being put upon, but you know, advocacy in terms of being a Jewish person has become kind of surprisingly present in my life.
It's been amazing to follow you on social media and to watch, again, something unapologetic. I think, again, whatever you do is unapologetic to me. And as Jews, we shouldn't be apologetic about the things that, you know, talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
This is now going to, okay, let's talk about this. Should we go into
it? Yeah, yeah, let's go in.
What do we think about Jewish representation in theater, TV, and film?
I get asked this a lot on social media. You know, is it okay for non-Jews to play Jews? And I believe yes.
Me too.
That it is okay for that. I believe that it is also, though, important to have Jews playing. For example, what was the Ruth Bader Ginsburg movie where they had like the most Anglo Felicity Jones? And I was like, her Jewishness is part of the character. And it's like Felicity Jones and Armie Hammer, the two, you know, waspiest. Yeah. And especially when it's I read this article where it talked about sort of the fact that when we have a Jewish female or male love interest and they look not Jewish at all, not that we have like an idea of what Jewish looks like, but when there's a very much an idea of, you know, a sort of just European standard of beauty, if that makes any sense, yeah, you know, and it can feel a little bit, we want to make sure that we're actually seeing, you know, people portray those characters who are those characters. However, you know, when you're in a space like a regional theater house, you know, I've played Christian people before. I've played all types of people. So I think it's about who can tell the story best. When it's in a big arena like Broadway or television and you have a huge budget and you can cast from a very big pool, I would hope that you would be looking to people who actually are that.
I think it starts, I think that I love what you said, and I do agree with all of that. I think you can absolutely, a non-Jew can absolutely play a Jew.
Yeah,
100%.
I agree.
I think what it boils down is to Jew face, and Sarah Silverman talks about this a bunch.
Sure.
For me, Jew face is the, where's my gefilte fish? I'm just going to speak like this because
that's Jewish.
That's Jewish. Let me complain.
Yeah.
Where's my schnoz? You know what I mean? And just like this weird, but Randy Graff, who is a Tony City of Angels. Fontaine, was a guest on Dear Multi-Hyphenate, and she was talking about Brooklyn on the Thames and how it was a group of women from Brooklyn that wanted to sound smarter than their parents and their families. So they spoke very clearly and aspirated. And that's my family. We have this like Jewish accent that is very kind of clearer than the typical, you know, Yenta stereotypical
one. Yeah.
And there's so much nuance that goes into a Jewish character, a Jewish person.
You would hope. If it, I mean, you know, you would hope that it was written with nuance.
We would hope it would be written with nuance. So here's the thing. I go, as long as you're not, as long as it's not a history piece, like for me, Fiddler or a story based on a person.
Yeah.
I think if it was like something like Fiddler or there was a different show about the, you know, the exodus of the turn of the century, I would like to see that portrayed by Jews. Especially that something that has to do with our, you know, the stereotype of Jewish people is that we are anxious, but that anxiety comes with the constant misplace of our people, constantly being pushed out. Where are we going to live next? Where are we going to be? How are we going to have food? How are we going to take care of our families? And that is carried down to us.
Totally.
So while it can be a funny thing, it's actually brought on to us from history.
Yeah. Well, we deal with it in humor, I believe.
Of course.
You know, that's sort of, I think that's not just, you know, synonymous with Jewish people. I think many people deal with anxiety through humor. I think, you know, but here's the other thing that I find interesting is that there are people who aren't Jewish, but just feel inherently Jewish. And I, of course, because I'm a Jewish person, did The Diary of Anne Frank years ago. I was not Anne. I was Margot. It was so great. And the people who were in the family, there were only like two Jews in the cast. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even realize that there were people who weren't Jewish in the cast until like later. I mean, this is kind of a, I'm looking right into the camera, but like there was a guy who did a lot of, can I say something really nasty on here?
Go for it.
There was a guy who did a lot of plays at Jewish, like at theaters that I thought was Jewish. I thought he was Jewish. And I did not know that he was not Jewish until we were fucking.
Great.
And then I was like, oh, you know what I mean? So sometimes you're like, I don't know. I can't tell. That's the other thing is I think that like, you know, you're like, oh, well, are you not? but I, you know, I think that that's another thing. And I think another thing when we talk about that is that, and this is something that's very important to me, is that throughout all conversations about Jewishness, Jews of color get written out of the conversation mm-hmm. so quickly in terms of what does a Jew look like? Where is a Jew from? Mm-hmm. What is a Jew's connection to anything? Mm-hmm. And so there's this write out of that. And what's exciting is to see plays being written by Jews of color,
mm-hmm.
which shines a light on the incredible, you know, expanse of mm-hmm. Jewish people. Like, you know, people think of Jew, they think of white mm-hmm. Ashkenazi Jew. They mm-hmm. don't think of Sephardi or Mizrahi or Swana or Beta Israel or Igbo. We don't think of that mm-hmm. way. And those stories are just as important. And I think that it's a super necessary part of the conversation on many levels, mm-hmm. Especially in the artistic realm when we think about the stories of Jewish people, highlighting Jews that are not, it cannot be like, well, the only thing that has ever happened to Jews was the Holocaust and that's it.
Right.
Not that that's not something we should be focusing on. Of course, we have to keep teaching that. But there's also lots of other stories and history of our people. And I think that's really important.
So. Thanks for sharing that, Danny.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you. I mean, we're more than the Holocaust. We're more than challah bread. We're, you know what I mean?
We're more than stuffed germa and gefilte fish.
Yes.
Not much more.
Not much more. But there's so many stories that we have to offer, especially, you know, Jews of color, you know. Not erasing them. And so that being said, that trails sort of into, like, the next conversation that I have regarding, like, multi-hyphenating is the fact that, like,
yeah,
because you're a writer, because we're both writers, I don't write plays, I write, you know, books and you know, articles and stuff like
entire
that.
Things
things, but we have the power to center these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So how for you as a writer in this industry, how do you take what we're talking about and start to put it in front of...
What a beautiful segue. I feel like I, you know, it's weird because you don't know what the next play that I'm doing is about. And yet at the same time, I'm like, wow, did you like research? So my very good friend, Awa, and I, Awa Salseka, everyone look her up because her voice is incredible. Her writing is incredible. Everything about her is incredible. She and I wrote a play together called The Joy That Carries You, which is about an Ashkenazi white Jewish family and a Black Baptist family coming together around Thanksgiving, because we were like, well, this isn't easy. Like, we find it funny to write a comedy about something that is at times a difficult and historied relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the idea came to me and I knew that there was no way that I didn't have the chutzpah, and I'm meaning that in the way of, like, you know, not the way that we use it now, where it's like chutzpah is a good thing, but like chutzpah being like, oh, that's a little you know what I mean?
Yes.
The gall. Yeah, I didn't have the gall to think, oh, well, I can write this story alone. Of course I can write this story alone. I can write this.
Right.
There's no fucking way. So I called Awa. I said, I have this idea. You want to write it with me? And she said yes, which was amazing and incredible, because she was one of those people who was working through the pandemic when you're like, God, how are you? She's performing still. And then we got in touch with Olney Theater Center and we were like, we've got this play. Do you want to play with it? And they said yes. And so it's going up in May.
Wow.
And what's really exciting is that we are now kind of consistently setting up the room so that everyone is represented, in the sense that, like, our directors, it's co-directed. So Jason Loweth, the artistic director of Olney Theater Center, who is an Ashkenazi Jewish man. And then Kevin McAllister, who you might know from Carolina Change recently, is also directing it. So they are directing it together. Awa and I are working on it together. So it's just building up this, like, I mean, I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be really cool, and it's just a great group.
I think so many regional theaters, first of all, in my book, How to Be Multi-Hyphenate in the Theater Business, Conversations, Advice, and Tips from Dear Multi-Hyphenate, being published by Rutledge Publishing in 2022, which you are featured in. Thank you, Danny Stoller, for taking the time to talk to me about that.
Of course.
I had my friend Aaron Gross talk to me. I asked him about socially responsible artistry, because I think socially responsible artistry is like... is making sure artists are paid, decentering whiteness, things like that. But he made a really interesting point about socially responsible artistry, like hiring and using artists from the area in which you are doing the work.
A fucking man.
So I think what you are doing, not only is it like a responsible way of this co-directing, co-writing.
Thank you.
It's you're also using local artists.
That's the thing I really admire about certain theaters in the DMV is their commitment to bringing in local talent. You know, I think that we have a beautiful group of people there. And of course, sometimes you have to bring in people from out of town. But I really do admire theaters who make a really diligent effort, strong effort to utilize the people of that area to tell the stories in the area. I think that's really important and really awesome.
I think that's incredible. I think that's really awesome. We're going to take a quick break.
Yeah.
We're going to hear from our sponsors and then we're going to continue this conversation.
Cool.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And we're back.
Yay!
You know, I think a lot of... Continuing the conversation about the socially responsible artistry and these types of things, like, I think a lot of theaters cry poverty in terms of, well, we can't hire that many people. We can't hire two directors. We can't hire two writers. We can't hire a this, a that.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone to make this space safer. And... What do you feel about that? Because I think it's BS.
It's totally BS. I think I have to say I feel quite fortunate. And maybe it's because the DMV is so small that if a theater is not willing to make the shifts, that is quite known. And of course, you know, there is that sort of thing, though, of like still wanting to work. Actors are still, of course, at the bottom of the totem pole in terms of being like, I need to work. So like, I'm willing to debase, but which sucks sometimes. But I will say that I feel very fortunate that in the DMV, the theaters that I have been working with, have really taken the time to make concerted efforts to create safer spaces, whether it's hiring full-time intimacy coordinators mm-hmm. or hiring full-time, you know, EDIA liaisons. That's exciting to me. And to hear about the initiatives is exciting to me. And to, I had been helping out as a literary, just like over pandemic, mm-hmm. helping, you know, read scripts and write up things for a theater. And they said, and I thought this was great. They were like, hey, we love that you're doing this. Just so you know, when we put out the, you know, the call for this, we're looking for people of color, mm-hmm. specifically because we want to make sure that we're telling different stories, we're bringing in different art, and we're creating a different, this theater is actually going to 50-50, if not more. They want to create an equal, equitable playing field in terms of their artistry. And I think that that's really fucking awesome to be like, this is what we're going for, and mm-hmm. this is what we want, the world we want to create. And that makes me very, very proud to be a DC-er.
I love that.
Yeah.
So when did you... Because one of my favorite things about multi-hyphenating and working with younger kids, and you know,
yes, I love that shit.
Yeah, I was just at Florida Thespians.
Yes, yes.
After a very, very, very rewarding week, I was, you know, having a theater full of
the youth
drama kids in Florida chanting "gay, gay, gay" in response to, you know, "don't say gay." Was emotional, and I think we got just as much out of it as they did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I'm teaching these workshops and stuff. I love watching their minds get blown.
Yeah, man.
The fact that they all think that, and I think it has to do with the stereotype, the mothers and the fathers and the parents and the guardians going, well, you know, this is very hard. You're going to have to go up there and wait tables and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you actually don't. And you also don't have to go to New York.
You do not have to go to New York.
You don't have to go to LA.
You don't have to go to New York. You don't have to go to LA. Yeah, no. You can
go to other cities.
Go wherever.
That are doing just as much.
Yes.
If not more.
There's a lot of cool stuff.
There's a lot of really...
Especially in the non-equity realm sometimes, especially if you're looking to build your resume. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? If you're looking for that. I think that's a very exciting thing that, you know... Theaters that are still reviewed by the Post and still reviewed by, you know, all of the normal publications that are non-union theaters, you know, yeah. And they're treated in the same regard. I think that's really exciting and a great way to sort of get your foot in and you know, earn your bones, to use some mafia terms.
Pay your dues.
Yeah, no, man.
I mean, paying your dues is such an interesting thing, right? Because, like, I've been in the industry 22 years as a child actor, so I feel like I have this old school view of the industry that is sometimes very hard to shake.
Me too.
Like the term paying your dues. I remember I had an artistic director sit me down once. It was an intern in college, in between one of my 2 years in college, and it was a regional theater. And basically the paper that I had to sign as the intern was like, you will do whatever we tell you to do. And I was like, and I was desperate to get my EMC points. Like, I was like, I you know, because back then it was very important.
Mm-hmm.
Still is now, but that's a different conversation. It's important for other reasons, and
yes.
The accessibility is different. But I remember being in rehearsals for shows, and the tech director would come and yank me out of rehearsal. And the director would be like, Michael's learning his song that he has to do in the show. And the tech director is like, I don't care. I need my set built. And as the intern, there was this like constant push and like pull thing that was not ironed out well on just like communication at all in the theater. But I remember when I,
yuck.
Yeah. Technical difficulty with Gabe. Hey, say hi, Gabe.
Hello.
That's my social media director, Gabe. If you're looking for a social media director, someone to run and design your social
media,
hire Gabe. Gabe Crawford. He'll knock over your camera, but he'll run your social media well. So, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to sit down with the artistic director and I'm going to talk about this and just be like, okay, this can't happen. I'm feeling very overwhelmed and put in situations that I don't feel safe in. And I remember she just looked at me and said, you just have to pay your dues. And it was like,
am I okay? There's that sort of, it was a really interesting thing when, you know, a lot of the theater that I'm working at, I'm about to start working at, is now doing 5-day weeks.
Oh, wow.
And it's fucking crazy to be like, what? Or like the last, I did the Thanksgiving play and we did not have 10 out of 12s. And I was like, this, you know, everyone's getting really like soft. Like nobody knows how to do this anymore. Right. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Like our mental health is actually probably much more intact. I think there was a sort of sense of glory. I think of it like when, sorry, this is so gross, but whatever. Like when you lost your virginity and you're talking to non-virgins and you're like, it really does hurt. Like eventually it gets better, but it's like so fucking painful.
I remember it well.
And like, you know, you feel like really cool being able to tell other people like, don't worry, like it's going to suck for you though. I feel like that's what
like,
it's
review
like.
Review it, Ithaca College.
Truly. I think that's the same thing with like, well, I got through it that way. And now you're going to get through it that way. You're going to get through it with 10 out of 12s. You're going to get through it with like no sleep. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. Blah, you know, I had to work in a space that was filled with asbestos. And it was like, just because we had to do that doesn't mean that it's a necessity to keep it going that way, because now you finally don't have to deal with it because you're up here. And now you can look and be like, oh, remember when, you know, I find that to be very, and I think that's a kind of, that works in the political realm too, because I think there's sort of this idea of like, well, in my day, this is how politics worked. And it's like, cool. But like in your day, people were asking, like saying that smoking was good. So like, give me a fucking break. And so I think it's the same with theater. I think that there needs to be sort of this idea of just because it might be uncomfortable because it's new doesn't mean that it's a bad thing, and doesn't mean that we're losing part of what theater was. You know, theater is also a job. I think so often we think that it has to be our lifeblood. And it's like, no, this is also a job. It's a piece of you, you know?
I'm actually a little obsessed with that, because the correlation, it has to do with multi-hyphenating.
Yes.
Because so many people are like, you know, you have to choose one thing. I don't know what you mean. I had to choose one thing. We pounded the pavement. I was in line every day making sure that blah, 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 getting in front of casting directors. Like, yeah, I do that too. But I also rely on my other talents to make me money, so I don't have to.
Yeah. And also, like, what about your interests? Like, just what about your fucking interests? Like, I've had a fucking baking blog and a business. I was a personal trainer. I think we have to figure out all of these different things that fill our buckets. And I also, I think there's something so exciting. I personally love watching people who, like, are content creators on Instagram or TikTok, because I'm like, this is so incredible to me. Like, there's that person, Julian Cookies, who does all of the, you know, reenactments of like TV shows and stuff, and does them in full costume and makeup. It's incredible to me. And this person obviously took a lot of fucking time to do this and create this. And that's how they built sort of their own space. I think that that's really exciting. We should all be building our own spaces and stories, etc., especially if we're having trouble carving out a space for ourselves in the conventional sense, or to bolster our egos enough to keep us trying to carve out that space. Because eventually it's like, oh, well, you know what? I'm just going to go get a normal people job. And, you know,
I think, you know, with the industry, we hear incredible stories of like, you know, I was a hoofer.
Yes.
And you're pounding the pavement and all, you know, listening to the lyrics of Broadway Baby. You know what I mean? Those very of its time lyrics.
Yeah. And also just like New York, New York. Of course. Just the song.
And we can have those things, but I think that you also don't have to struggle while you're finding those things.
Yeah.
You don't have to live in one room with seven other people. You don't have to. You could also like take that energy and like create like a little side business that you can still operate when you book your Broadway show.
Yes.
So that way the momentum is still carrying on when that show closes.
Yeah, I think it's also about like, you know, I don't know if, and maybe you can relate to this. I don't know if this is a crazy sentiment, but for myself anyway, I think for a long time I was worried that if I got my mental health and spiritual health in check, then I would lose the things that made me a really good artist.
Yes.
Like, I want to be fucking messy. I'm messy. I'm so messy.
So
oh, my
messy.
God.
The messiest.
And that I would not be able to do my job if I wasn't completely fucked up. Uh-huh. And I think that, you know, that's what a true artist is. But I think that we need to, that's the thing, is like, we keep having to remember that it's a job. It is a job. And like, we still need to bring our mental health in there. There is no point in coming in and like sending ourselves like, you know, to an institution because of how, like, this is going to sound really crazy, but did you see House of Gucci?
I haven't yet. Remy watched it on the plane down from Florida.
Have you listened to any of the interviews?
Yes.
Well, there's a great one where Selma Hayek is sitting next to Lady Gaga and they zoom in on Selma Hayek's face while Lady Gaga's talking, because it's kind of like, what are you saying? Like, you threw away all the parts of yourself. You almost sent yourself into like a mental tailspin. You were going to have to go to like a hospital. That's, to me, not worth it.
No.
I don't think it's worth it. And I've worked with actors on stage where it's like there are actors who are like that, and then there are actors who are just like, it's an on-off switch, and the change in terms of their abilities is negligible. Sometimes it's actually the person who's got the on-off switch that you're like, oh, they're able to adapt,
right?
They're able to work with others, collaborate. Do you know what I'm saying?
Of course I do.
So I just, all that to say, like, your mental health is paramount.
I think drinking the Kool-Aid is very harmful when you're in a, I think.
That happened in college a lot, though, isn't it?
Oh, it definitely did. Drinking the Kool-Aid. I wish that there were moments, and I'm still close with some of our professors, and I feel like I'm much more honest with them now than I was in school, because I was so worried about getting cut.
Oh my God, that idea of like getting cut, when it's like, anybody listening to this, theater and art is subjective.
Yeah.
Somebody else's fucking opinion is going to be different to somebody else's. It's
yep.
The same way as like when I was in school for integrative nutrition, and it's like, okay, find a source, like a backed up scientific research paper on, you know, the benefits of soy.
Mm-hmm.
Now find the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Now do that for dairy. Now mm-hmm. do that for this. Now do that for this. There's always another option,
right?
And another side. And so I think when we're in this space where we are literally spending several years trying to impress the same group of people in the way that they want their art made, if anything, it stymies us from learning how to make our own art, or realizing that this world is a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
We end up just creating the same type of people to go out and do the same type of things, which, you know, whenever I teach master classes or I teach any sort of thing with students, I always say the things about you that you hate about yourself are the things that are going to make you the money and are going to make you stand out. You know, the things that, like, when you get home from a party and like even silence feels loud and you're sitting there and like going over all the things that you did that you just wish you could fucking kill yourself about.
Yeah.
Those are the moments where it's like, that's where your art lives. That's where, not because you're sad, but because like all the things that are too much about you are the things that you can harness to create with.
That's beautiful.
That's
Zanny.
What I think. And I think sometimes college works to be like, let's knock that out of you to make
yeah.
you into.
I showed up as whatever. Mikey with this Long Island Jewish accent that I was really proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to be known as Michael, and then had to talk like this now, and it's how I
did. They make you change your name to Michael?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had then, to go to speech pathology too.
Yeah. And then what happens, the first gig that I book, my first professional gig outside, I turn my tassel, drive right to my first rehearsal of the pre-Broadway tryout of On the Town. Guess who's in my cast with me? This guy named Mikey. And he's 33 years old, has all these incredible credits, and and loved in the industry for who he, for his talent and the things that he does, not because he's Mikey.
Yeah, I went to, so I had been told that I had to go to speech pathology because nobody would hire a Shakespeare actress who sounded like Rosie Perez, is what they said. There was a lot of shit that was said about me, about who I was, which was so funny, about how I wasn't an ingenue, I wasn't this. Well, when I got out, the first like professional equity gigs that I got were like Shakespeare ingenues.
Yeah.
You know, like they were soft. Those are the things that I found that I actually do best, oddly, because I love to watch, I love to listen. It's a lot easier for me to be on stage and watch other people, and it's part of the reason I loved Margot Frank so much, is because I spent the entire show watching. I love that. I love that sort of world. And but I had been told that that's like not who you are. That's not what you do.
Wow.
This isn't that, you know. And I just like, fuck that.
No, I mean, I think it's all valid, because I think, you know, the things that we had to deal with our professors, I think is another direct correlation to casting directors. We're auditioning constantly for this one group of people.
Yeah.
That just will, and I'll say this, judge us for what they think is not good or not right or what should, and it's so frustrating, because I go, why can't you just see past that? Or why can't you, for me, and this is a hot take, I think a casting director's job is to actually like provide with the resources and the and the notes for us to help.
Yeah,
you know, we want to solve their. It's so funny because
I totally get
when
this.
They teach workshops and stuff like this, casting directors, they go, "We want you to succeed. We want you to solve our puzzles."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, "Okay, well, if you want me to solve the puzzles, I can. I just really need to know that." Like, when I used to do workshops and classes, the feedback I would get was literally, "Michael, that's great. I don't have any notes." And if I had that now, I guarantee you, I would say. Great, so what shows are you casting that I can come in for right now?
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's the thing that I find really interesting about... this is another thing. I feel like this is becoming like a DC, Maryland, Virginia love fest.
Well, I wanted to...
What I do love about it is... I know, because we want to make sure that people know that like fucking regional theater exists.
Absolutely.
Is that you know your casting directors, you know your artistic directors, and a lot of the time you have developed relationships with them.
Right.
So I have been able, to literally, several of the parts that I've gotten that have changed my life have been because I wrote and was able to write because I knew these people and said, you need to see me for this. Mm-hmm. I'm your girl.
Yeah.
And I was. And I think that there was that sort of gumption, I don't know, is as appreciated in New York because there's sort of a way to do things. Whereas in DC, Virginia, Maryland, you know, I always really admire when people will send me things asking about shows that I'm auditioning. And also, to your point about notes, this is really important to me too. I've had talks with a few casting directors where I've said, now that I've been behind the table as a writer, I'm like, you have no idea how much it would mean to the people who are at least making the final callback to let them know that their work was appreciated.
Yes.
And so for Easy Women Smoking Loose Cigarettes at Signature, I was very thankful because I asked the casting director at the time there, Kelly, we had people come in, we had people who had done readings before come in, and we wound up with a cast of like all new people. And I asked her to send notes to all of them. Every single one of them, just saying thank you for your time. And then I personally sent messages. I was like, very much, this has to be done, because I want people to know that when they come in and they leave their guts on the floor, that it's not for nothing.
Right.
And so often what the difference between getting cast and not getting cast, now that I've just been sitting behind the table as like either a reader or a writer, is so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes, of course, it's like, well, this is the only person who can do it, you know, but other times it's so many different factors. You're building a family, you're building a mishpacha, you're building something. It has to do with energy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's fucking wild. I love being a reader. Being a reader is my favorite thing to do because I love being able to help other people get jobs. But it's fascinating to see you could have 10 different people come in and kick the shit out of the role. And then it's like because this other person came in who kicked the shit out of it for another part, well, now those energies match.
Right.
So that's that person has cast this person. Right. So when people are – but I think that it's really important, though, for the actors to know you did great work and you worked really hard and we're so thankful that you came here.
I think that shift would just help mend a massive wound between casting directors and actors because actors, I think, are hurting in so many different ways.
Yes.
And I think many – and I know a lot of casting directors – and they're not gatekeepers and they're not bad people.
No.
But I think the lack of communication provides this weird power dynamic that appears as if it is this like masochistic experience.
Well, yeah. Like, so one of my closest friends, Jenna Duncan, amazing person, also a casting director and a director, just across the board wonderful, is one of my closest friends. She's going to be in my wedding. I was in hers, and she is the casting director for several theaters in DC. Like, she is their casting director. And one year, she had to turn me down for, like, 14 jobs, which was which was an interesting thing because, you know, it kind of brought out this sort of area in our friendship where we sort of had to reconcile with that, talk about certain things, et cetera. But it was an incredible thing, too, because, you know, you sort of – come to this realization that in the end they can give as much feedback as possible, they can give as much like push, but you know, it's not in the end their choice specifically,
right?
Of course. And I also wonder if they're casting for like, you know, 10 different shows, 5 different theaters, etc., and they're giving emails to every person saying thank you so much, da, 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 it can feel overwhelming in that space too. I think of it kind of like, you know how like if something goes really wrong at a dinner, they don't even have to like at a restaurant, they don't even have to comp you the dinner. They just have to say, I see you and I understand. Right. I'm so sorry that that happened. I, you know, tell me how I can make the rest of your night better.
Right.
That's all I need, really, right. I think, is just being like, thank you for coming. That was wonderful.
Right.
The end. You know?
Yeah.
Bye. You know what I mean? Just knowing that you remembered that I was there is kind of a nice feeling.
I love that, Danny.
So I try to do that when people come in for my shows as well, especially when they come in and they have to read stuff where they're like hysterical or like, you know, throwing their bodies around. And I'm like, I don't want to just be like, fuck you.
Yeah. I think that little shift is going to – will help us take the industry from pre-pandemic to post-pandemic. We talk about how the industry is changing.
Yeah, compassion.
I think everyone is responsible for adjusting. Mm-hmm. Who they are and how they enter a room or treat the room. Every single person.
Yeah.
Every person is responsible for adjusting who they are post-pandemic because we have collectively changed. So if we speaking of more socially responsible artistry, if we uphold a position in this industry, we have to check ourselves and go, the way that I was navigating the industry, is it serving myself or the world around me in the same way post-pandemic?
I think there's also, you know, I think that there is nothing wrong with making amends. Not that everybody, I think of the Tupac quote where he talks about, you know, it's not that I don't want you to eat, I just don't want you to eat at my table. Because there are people where we have not gotten along and stuff like that. I think I talk about this on my own podcast about, you know, God or source or the universe blessed me with both like a very polarizing personality and also a pathological need to be liked. So that's very difficult.
Right.
And sort of this realization that like a good apology goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And I think over pandemic, a friend of mine really was we were talking about apologies and I was like, I want to learn to be a great fucking apologizer. Mm. Even if the other person can't take it, even if the other person doesn't like me afterwards, even if like my niceties fall on deaf ears, I want to be able to apologize and be truly sorry for things that I've done that are really fucked up because God, you know, if anything, this time has provided reflection and I'm like, ugh. And of course, sometimes it sinks into self-hate, but most of the time it's like, how... I want to be able to make amends so that there's this great... Okay, can I say one quick anecdote?
Always.
So there's this, I forget who it's from, but it's a Buddhist idea of if you're driving down the highway every day from your house to work and you always pass this same tree and you're just like, there's that tree on the right, there's that tree, there's that tree. And then one day you take a chance or a second to really look at the tree as if it were the first time that you've looked at this tree. And you notice all these different things about the tree. You notice the way the light catches it. You know, all like notice how, you know, the branches move, etc. And it becomes a completely new tree. It was something that you just passed without even like looking at it. Because also when your brain knows that it's going to see something, it doesn't even have to see it fully. It just like kind of puts it together in the right side of your mind. Like, this is something I drive by. And so it's just kind of a pixelated thing. But now I'm giving it my focus and I'm seeing its inherent beauty, its difference. I think that's kind of how we have to look at people when we come back into this space, is like, we're going to be meeting people for the first time. They're going to be meeting us for the first time, really, because we are different people since then. And I think it's about giving other people grace, and giving ourselves grace, because we are going to fuck up, and just having the tools in our arsenal to mend where we can and to be humble where we can, if that makes sense.
We can all take a step back from our egos.
Ooh, man.
Coming back into this world and the life of theater.
Golly.
I think we all can do that. Danny Soler, you are the absolute best. I love you so much.
You're the best.
So your new play.
Yes, The Joy That Carries You.
Tell us more about it.
It goes up in May. It's going to, I think it might be available for streaming for a little while too, but I don't know about that, but I'll let you know. It goes up in May through June at the Olney Theater Center. I'm so stoked. It's beautiful. It was written with Awa Salseca. As I said, it's performed by a beautiful cast. And that's the next thing, I think. And amazing. Then just, you know, the podcast and all that fucking jazz.
And where can we find you on social media?
At Danny Danger Stoller.
Yes.
Yes.
I love you so much.
I love you so fucking much.
You're the absolute best.
You're the absolute best.
And thank you, Gabe, for getting some of the equipment. Woohoo, Gabe! Today.
Woohoo, Gabe. Sorry if that, like, fucked up the sound.
No, it was perfect. Yay. And thank you to Broadway Podcast Network. Thank you to Alan and Dory and Patrick and everyone there. It's an incredible family of podcasters. And if you're listening, please follow me on Instagram at TheMichaelKushner or at DearMultiHyphenate. And if you want to share your story, you can go to DearMultiHyphenate.com and submit your multi-hyphenate experience, and maybe I'll have you on the podcast. Who knows? All right. Follow, subscribe, like, comment, do all that stuff, and be in touch. Love you all. Bye.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.